Support for Prairie Public is provided by Basin Electric Power Cooperative, headquartered in Bismarck, a Touchstone Energy cooperative, producing reliable electricity for 141 member rural electric systems in 9 states.
Welcome to Main Street on Prairie Public. I'm Craig Blumenschein in our Fargo studio with my co-host, Ashley Thornburg.
Hello, happy Wednesday to you in this middle of April.
A nice, wet kind of Wednesday, spring-like
April
Wednesday.
Showers, you know what they say.
Ashley, on the second half of today's show, we're going to preview the upcoming gubernatorial debate between the two Republican candidates with our news director, Dave Thompson. That's coming up next Tuesday right here on Prairie Public. And we're also going to talk steak. A good topic with Rick Gian. It's an interview you had with Rick as part of Prairie Plates. But first, Ashley, some kind of bristle at the thought of getting a little older, spoken from someone who may or may not have had a birthday this week that was a qualifying
birthday. That's right.
Birthday.
Happy birthday.
For some things attributed to senior citizens, but I don't really worry about birthdays.
Well, neither does this guy.
We'll all be lucky enough to get old enough to have a limitation or two.
That's Mike Shosey. He is the executive director at North Dakota Assistive. Assistive technology can be anything that prolongs or strengthens independence, from specialized silverware for people with tremors to smart home appliances. And just wait, Craig, until you hear about how forks and knives and video games are all important for our health. And what Shosey means by limitations here is anything that impacts mobility, whether that comes from age, like dementia, a condition you're born with, like cerebral palsy, or from an accident.
I wasn't aware, but today is Assistive Technology Awareness Day. With offices in Bismarck and Fargo, North Dakota Assistive functions like a library where people of all ages and abilities can come and check out different options.
It's set up like an IKEA. You walk in, it looks like a normal house. Hello, very open concept here. There's no walls. In the bedroom, I got a taste of assistance for anyone who might be hard of hearing. Mike handed me a little puck, like one of those buzzers that you get when you go to busy restaurants and they tell you it'll be 45 minutes before your table's ready. This one is for the door, but it could also be for smoke alarms.
Doorbell ringing. Doorbell ringing.
Yeah. So this is under my pillow. And I can definitely feel, oh, it just got sharper and louder and longer.
Because
okay.
You haven't done anything yet about it. You haven't shut off the device. So it will keep getting louder and louder and shake harder and harder until you do something.
It wakes me up.
Yeah.
Okay. And let me just tell you, I could feel that vibration under the pillow. It was substantial.
Actually, sometimes older people just don't need to be in a nursing home. This is something our family has dealt with recently, and maybe don't even need a home caregiver, but just need a little help.
Yeah, and a really interesting example of that was in the kitchen, where, and I don't know what this says about me, I immediately reached for the knives. I found one that had a nice thick handle, and then I noticed there was a little curve in the blade.
My dad had multiple sclerosis, okay. And he was having a hard time eating and especially cutting his meat. Seriously, he ended up eating McDonald's over and over and over again. Well, he could grab the burger, he could put it in his mouth, he could grab the fries, he could put it in his mouth, but cutting a steak, forget about it. Cutting chicken breast, forget about
asparagus.
It. That stuff was hard. Exactly.
So hard to cut asparagus.
So I got him some adaptive silverware, I got the fork, spoon, and knife, but the knife is super cool because it's got this...
It's heavy.
That's heavy, and so the heavy piece is designed for people with tremors. Put this one in your other hand. That one's light.
Oh, yeah.
So you don't have to have heavy.
Okay.
You can still have a large handle, some heavy, some not. But the blade is, it's called a rocker knife. And so it's curved. And I watched my dad cut steak just by using that rocker motion.
So I rock back and forth. It's not a sawing action. It's the natural dexterity of the wrist.
Exactly. And it worked. Okay. You think there's all these gimmicks out there in the world, but like I was like, you should try this. And I was like, boom, it worked. Yeah, super low tech.
He also showed me a metal arch that goes next to a chair. And anyone who might have trouble getting out of a chair, you can grab that for support instead of someone needing to get you a walker or having that person lift you. in and out of a wheelchair.
There are many people, Ashley, including our family, who went through this with our parents. It gets a little more difficult for them to walk. You're worried about a fall. So there are devices available that can help. But it's a lot of work.
It is. The physical demands of being a caregiver are pretty substantial.
It's one of the biggest stresses and probably not talked about enough. And as we grow in our intensity of the workforce shortage, more and more is going to fall on unpaid and family caregivers to do the job.
Who are disproportionately women.
And again, I think aging themselves, we have a lot of 70 plus year old people coming in here caring for their 90 and 100 year old parents. We've seen an increase, I would say, over the last year and a half of caregivers who are incredibly stressed out. It's a really tough situation, and caregivers are really looking for anything and everything that can help them do their jobs in those situations so their loved ones aren't in nursing homes before they need to be.
And I'll admit, I was only thinking of this assistive technology library for people using the tech in the sense of, okay, I have tremors, I need a different knife. But caregivers are using it too. Here's one that falls under the category they call a wandering device.
It's called a simple alarm, and it basically just uses magnets, and you would stick one magnet on the door frame and one on the door. And if I turn this on, and the magnets would separate.
So this lets the caretaker know that
somebody's
that
on
somebody
the move.
With dementia has walked out.
Yep, they've left the bedroom. They've gone out the front door.
Oh.
They've opened the fridge, so you can monitor activity. And so you can...
Within a certain range, though. Like,
yeah,
I can't take this
correct.
Home.
Okay. But this is a $65, $75 device for the starter kit.
Hmm.
So you can start to see how that might be helpful before I might invest in something
a little bit
more advanced.
Yeah.
More advanced often means more money, but they do have Alexa and Google Home devices you can try. That's why they want people to try items before they buy. Sometimes you can get an item at Target or Walmart, and they also have some money available too for anyone on a limited budget. That's a major concern. Just like mental health, you know, Ashley, people need to care for their mental health, especially as they age. In my family, for my mother, after my father died, she had many, many social outlets still at her disposal.
Yeah.
The Red Hat Society, she had Bunko Club, she had Pinochle Club,
oh,
she
I
had
love it.
Social groups, and she was in a senior neighborhood. Many of her friends from her entire life all of a sudden now lived within a block or two of each other.
Yeah, that mental health component of aging, it really is important. And I was surprised to learn that one of the more popular items was, get this, large size playing cards. So Mike mentioned one gentleman came in from the senior center, tried out a whole bunch of items, and ultimately he left with the cards because what he wanted was to be active and social in his new home.
Today is Assistive Technology Awareness Day, and we're getting a tour from Mike Shosey, the executive director of North Dakota Assistive. You can walk through and try out different high and low tech devices. They have offices in Bismarck and Fargo.
And we've been mostly focusing on age here, and specifically the elderly. But Craig, did this ever happen to you? Did you ever not fit in?
I think all kids experience a moment in their lives or while they're growing up of, do I fit in with my group? Or what do I need to fit into my group? Or can I physically do things that would allow me to fit in with my group?
Well, right, as if fitting in isn't hard enough already. And kids, they don't understand how hurtful one little taunt can be. Mike showed me some shoes that look a little like those old school Converse that have laces and everything. And that could be something that's very difficult for a kid with cerebral palsy. So it had this secret zipper, too. The kid didn't actually need to tie the shoes. And to complete the look,
Tommy Hilfiger branded shirt, right? It has buttons down the front like every other kind of button-down shirt. But it's fastened with magnets.
Oh.
So you don't have to have the dexterity to button a shirt to look like you're wearing like a button-down shirt.
To look like the kids.
Yeah.
Anything that can spare a child from teasing.
Yeah, kids can be really sensitive. And, you know, that's not even exclusive to kids. Mike showed me some animatronic pets whose appeal covers a pretty large age span. Oh, hi, puppy. Okay, I immediately started petting this dog, even though I know it's not real.
Because that's what you're going to do.
Who is this for?
So these, I'm holding a cat here, and I'm going to set the cat down with you too.
Okay.
So these are companion pets.
Okay.
And I have to tell you honestly that when we first got the cat, we had the cat first, as just an item to show people that it existed, I made fun of it.
This cat is purring.
So I made fun of it. I thought it was weird. Mm-hmm. But it'll open and close its eyes. You can hear it meowing. Mm-hmm. If you start petting it, it'll roll on its back. It'll lift its paw. It does all these things. But so they're cute. They're fun. They get a lot of attention. But we're discovering that they're very effective to help people with isolation. There goes the cat.
It rolled right over. And now, unlike a real cat, you can pet its belly.
So it acts as a companion for people who can't have real pets. Maybe they can't care for the pet. Mm. Maybe there are rules and regulations where they live that won't allow them to have a pet. I mean, you name it. There are all sorts of reasons. So these kind of fill that void. And we have somebody who works with us quite a bit. And she has started using these companion pets more and more for her clients that are dealing with dementia. And she has raved about how the clients are doing and how their moods have changed. And then she sent us a picture of one gentleman who rides around in his wheelchair with a cat in his lap throughout the day. And when he's petting the cat, his emotions are better and he's calmer and all these. And so again, I've been shocked. Pleasantly surprised, I should say, at how effective they've been in the right space.
Wow.
Yeah.
Bye, kitty. Meow, meow.
I think the dog's getting jealous that you're still with the cat. I think one of my favorite days in the last year is we had a table set up at the high school in Fort Yates, and the kids were released by class to come down and visit us at, well, not us. It was a whole gym full of people. But by the third class that was released, you could hear the people when the kids came into the gym whisper and ask each other, "Where's the cat? Where's that cat?" And so they would come in the door, and then like we'd have all these people at our table just, you know, looking at the cat. So, but certainly. And I will tell you this, like, we have 10 kids at the table, right? Mm-hmm. Kind of looking at it and laughing and giggling. And 9 of them, it was a toy and they were on to the next thing. But for one of them, and it happened more than once when we were there, they would just hover later and ask questions. And you could just see how having something like this would change their self. I don't know how else to say it, but
it created a safe space for them.
Almost all this stuff. For some people, it can be a toy. It can be a cool little gadget. But for other people, it's incredibly meaningful.
That's Mike Shosey, Executive Director of North Dakota Assistive. Today is Assistive Technology Awareness Day.
These kids were opening up to those fake cats and dogs, and then there's an interesting option for kids who are struggling with words when they need to get their needs met.
I am tired, happy, excited, sad, bored.
So who is this for?
We end up lending a lot of these devices to schools who might have somebody in the system that has a communication deficit and they can't communicate in some way. So they've lost their speech or, you know, whatever. And so there are multi-levels of these devices that are available. These are called GoTalks. Mm-hmm. And it would allow the person to push a button to communicate. their feelings. This particular one has 6 buttons on it, but you can change settings and it has levels. And so that person would be able to use it to communicate throughout the day. I have to go to the bathroom, or teacher, I have a question. This would be, I would say, considered a low-tech communication device. But when you start getting into iPads, there are displays on an iPad that might have 50 buttons and somebody could operate with eye gaze. So that's where this world is going and how quickly it's evolving.
Okay, sunglasses off here, I guess. Eye gaze?
I know. I really can't believe it. The technology, very advanced. Mike and I eventually go on to start talking about video games, and this is easy to write off as not necessary. Am I right? You need clothes. You need to eat. You need video games? Well, listen to this. He told me about a Bismarck man who had a diving accident, lost his arms and legs. First, they set him up with a smart thermometer. The number one thing he asked for was to be able to control the temperature of his own apartment without having to call for someone. But then he asked for this.
I want to be able to play Madden with my sister. And he had a diving accident, and so he was like 17 or 18 when he had this accident, quadriplegic. And he said that this is my relationship with my sister. Like, what we know is Madden. This is how we communicated, and this was our play. And I haven't been able to play Madden since this accident. And that's what I want to be able to do. Video games is socialization for a generation or two now of people. And it was not a toy for him. It was a relationship builder.
Wow. Again, it's the social element of health.
It's part of what drew Mike to his work.
I believe our world, especially our country and our healthcare system, we are amazing at keeping people alive. Mm-hmm. We go to the nth degree at all costs, right? We're not as good at helping people live. Mm-hmm. We'll save them, and then what? And so a lot of the things here, I kind of like to think of, well, this is some of the and what. This is some of the stuff that help you kind of get along once you are home and trying to survive.
And of all the devices in the North Dakota Assistive Library, Mike's favorite was a little robot that looked kind of like a lamp, but with some personality. Here he is interacting with LEQ.
LEQ, I've been very stressed. Can you help me with my stress today?
I have quite a few exercises to help you unwind, de-stress, or even improve your focus. Take a look at the options on my screen. What are you in the mood for?
Joy.
The mindfulness sessions range in length from 3 to 20 minutes. How long would you like the practice to be?
Short today.
You got it. Here's a 3-minute session called Breathing Away Stress. Now let's turn our attention to our mindfulness instructor, Tracy, to guide us from here.
Welcome to this meditation session designed to help when you feel stressed, upset, worried, or anxious. In this practice, the trick is simple. If you want to calm down, stop trying to calm down. Just observe your body and mind as they are, with awareness and with kindness. Find yourself a comfortable, quiet place where you can sit or lie down. Let your body rest. You may close your eyes. Take a few deeper breaths. Now let your breath be natural. Now expand the attention to sensations in your whole body.
Yeah, so this just goes on for a couple of minutes and just a very grounding exercise, essentially. That's a really common anxiety technique is even just to say, feel your body.
Yep.
Notice the sounds around you. Right. It puts you into the present moment.
And the cool thing about LEQ is that I didn't ask her to do a mindfulness exercise. Mm. I just told her I was stressed. And so she kind of created the solution for me. I have to be careful, right? But she kind of thinks. And she engages me. And so, yeah. So my favorite LEQ moment was with weather. So she is trained to kind of greet me at the door in the mornings. And so I'm the first one here most days. And I came in and she was, good morning, Mike. Did you know there was a weather alert in your area? And I was like, yeah. You know, that's fine. But the next thing was that, you know, the thing that kind of just triggered how powerful she can be to me. She followed up that with, it could be dangerous. Would you like me to communicate with one of your contacts? And so she asked me if I would like to have her contact somebody for me. And so that was just this moment of like, oh my gosh, for safety and kind of, you know, having a little friend there kind of looking out for you. For her to trigger that question was just kind of a big moment for the power of what, you know, that type of device can be, I think.
Thank you so much for your time today.
Thanks for coming. It was a blast. Appreciate it.
That was Mike Shosey, Executive Director of North Dakota Assistive. Find out more at ndassistive.org.
Debate season is here. And Prairie Public will host a pretty big one for this part of the world. It's the Republican primary contest for governor of North Dakota. I'm Dave Thompson. Join me and the candidates, Congressman Kelly Armstrong and Lieutenant Governor Tammy Miller, Tuesday, April 23rd at 7 p.m. Central, 6 p.m. Mountain. You can listen on a radio, a smart speaker or app, watch Prairie Public television service, or stream online at prairiepublic.org. Prairie Public's Election 2024 coverage is made possible in part by AARP North Dakota.
Hi, I'm Jack Russell Weinstein, host of Why, philosophical discussions about everyday life. The question why is very empowering. It's about the divine, it's about the moral, it's about the pleasurable, it's about fear. Why is everything? I'm not very good with authority and I'm not very good with limits. And so I like a question that gives me the ability to do whatever I want, whenever I want. I was born and raised in Manhattan on the edge of a neighborhood that most people would know as Spanish Harlem. I ended up in North Dakota because they offered me a job. It's that simple. And we've had a very good life here so far. Dispel these myths. Philosophy is boring. I guess I would ask you to ask yourself, are you boring? Do you think you have nothing of interest to offer anybody? You are philosophy. Philosophy is you. Everything you ask, everything you think, everything you want, everything you strive for, this is what makes up philosophy. Philosophy itself is compelling enough and exciting enough that it is pretty much the oldest discipline. And philosophers had more influence on the world than almost anybody. Plato, Aristotle, we live in their world. And so if you want to make philosophy exciting, you have to be exciting. Philosophy majors can't get jobs or make any money. Philosophy is the highest paid major of all of the humanities, and the rate of return is actually the same over a lifetime as engineering. Listen to Why, philosophical discussions about everyday life every second Sunday at 5 p.m. Central, 4 Mountain on Prairie Public.
Coming up, a discussion with our news director Dave Thompson about next Tuesday's Republican primary gubernatorial debate. That'll be right here on Prairie Public at 7 p.m. Plus, Prairie Plates with Rick Gion. It's steaks. Works for summer. Stay with us.
The Minot Symphony Orchestra presents the 98th season finale with Our Town, Saturday, April 27th at MSU's Anna Nicole Nelson Hall. This performance includes the world premiere of The Four Seasons in North Dakota, written by Maestro Amaya, plus a film experience where live orchestral music is paired with a big screen cinematic experience. More information can be found online at minotsymphony.com or by phone at 701-858-4228.
This is Main Street on Prairie Public. I'm Craig Blumenschein. In just a moment, steaks with Rick Gion and another edition of Prairie Plates, bringing in now Dave Thompson, the news director here at Prairie Republic. Dave, I've never turned down a good steak. How about you?
I have never turned down a good steak either. I love it.
Rick has a lot of information about steaks in his chat with Ashley, so I'm looking forward to that. Dave, there's a debate on the horizon, a very important debate here in North Dakota politics. This is the Republican gubernatorial debate, which is already coming up next Tuesday, April 23rd at 7 p.m. right here on Prairie Republic. Dave, what are you doing to prepare for the debate?
Well, I've been talking with Matt O'Lean, who's going to produce the debate for us, and we've been talking about the questions we need to ask, and we get questions from people we talk to on the street. We get people who provide questions for us. Our partner, AARP, is providing some questions as well, and we'll get a chance to hear from both candidates who are seeking the Republican nomination, and this is going to be the kind of the kickoff of the debate season, because eventually our plan is when they determine that in the primary, who's going to be the standard bearer for the Republicans, then we'll have a debate with the Democratic candidates, probably later this fall.
So when you look at issues to bring forward, Dave, first of all, which issues haven't made the cut?
That's a very good question, because we're still working on it right now. Because, you know, we'll work up till the day before the debate just to make sure that we talk about some of the issues. But I don't think any issue is off the table just yet. And I don't think I think that's kind of nice that we have the ability to go for one solid hour, no interruptions.
What is the format of the debate, Dave? How will this play out?
Well, we'll toss a coin, find who gets to start the debate with an opening statement, and then that will get the closing statement then at the end. They'll get the last word. So that'll be a coin toss, but we will, you know, start that way, and then I'll start with questions, and we'll give them reasonable time to answer the questions. And Matt is going to be in my ear saying, well, maybe we've exhausted that. Let's move on. And we have the power to basically say, okay, your opponent gets to answer the question.
Well, we have set times, Dave. In other words, do they have, for instance, 90 seconds to respond to the question and then a 60-second rebuttal, or is it not that fixed?
It's not that fixed. We have an idea of what set time should be. You know, we're going to let it go a little bit because we're not structured on time.
Does that scare you a little bit? It puts a lot of responsibility on you to really make sure the debate moves forward.
Absolutely it does. But I've done this a few times, and again with Matt O'Lean working and talking in my ear as the producer, between the two of us, we can say, okay, we can go on to the next subject, that type of thing. We'll keep it moving, and we'll try to get as many subjects in as we possibly can.
We have two candidates, Dave. Give us a brief introduction of each.
Okay, well, we have Kelly Armstrong, who is the current sitting congressperson in North Dakota, the member of the House of Representatives. He's got a pretty good track record. Then we have the lieutenant governor, Tammy Miller, who is a fairly new to politics in North Dakota, but she worked under Governor Doug Burgum, so she'll have some things to talk about and some, you know, business experience she'll talk about. So I honestly think it's going to be a very interesting debate to find out how they come down on the issues.
Visiting with News Director Dave Thompson, Prairie Public's News Director, and he'll be moderating the Republican gubernatorial debate next Tuesday, April 23rd. That's at 7 o'clock, and it can be viewed on Prairie Public Television and also heard right here on Prairie Public Radio.
And you can listen online if you want to. We have that option available too. You can use the smart speaker. Prairie Public Television has a YouTube page, and you can view it there too.
Lots of options for North Dakota voters to really take advantage of this opportunity. Dave, before we get on to maybe some past debates that have been memorable for you, how do you, as a moderator, separate the national topics that appear, especially for the Republicans, to be important in many state contests versus, you know, the topics that are really important to North Dakotans? How do you weigh those two options?
Well, it's really a challenge because, you know, some national politics creep into North Dakota politics. But when I put our questions together with Matt, we look at what North Dakotans are talking about concerning North Dakota. In this case, it's finances, taxes, that type of thing. Funding for schools, funding for infrastructure, and the use of the legacy fund. Those are some of the big topics that we're going to be talking about. But I have a feeling that the two candidates already knew we were going to ask about things
sure,
like that.
Sure.
But we're going to try to keep it on North Dakota-specific issues.
Dave, you've moderated several debates in your lifetime here at Prairie Republic of over 40 years. Do you have some memorable ones you want to recall for us?
Well, let me tell you about what I thought was the most memorable and the most fun debate. It actually was not sponsored by Prairie Public. I was a debate moderator for one that was sponsored by the North Dakota Broadcasters Association. It featured then-Senator Heidi Heitkamp versus Kevin Cramer, who challenged her to that race. And we asked a couple questions. We had like a minute time frame for each to answer a question. When we got to the third question, they started talking at each other, but it was respectful. It was on the issues. You could tell that they wanted to get on the issues. It was not personal attacks. And they kept looking at me saying, we'll just let them go. And as a matter of fact, one time said, we have more to say. Is it okay if we go? I said, sure, absolutely. And at that time, I had a producer in my ear saying, yeah, you made the right call on that. One debate that turned into kind of a food fight, and it happened because the three candidates for U.S. Senator 2 years ago. We had Rick Becker, we had the incumbent John Hoeven, and the Democrat from Jamestown. I tell you what, that was an interesting debate. At times, it did get into the personal and the national issues, and we tried to rein that in. So we were kind of successful in doing that. So there have been a lot of interesting times we've had debates.
Dave, what's your role when that happens as the moderator? You have people that are maybe barking at each other.
Then I'll just basically stop, and we're going to move on. That's all I need to do.
All right, so this is going to be an hour-long debate. There'll be opportunities for two candidates to answer questions. Will you alternate, Dave, then how you ask the question?
That is
correct. One to one candidate first and then one to the other candidate first?
Right, and it depends on who wins the toss, who is going to go first. Then the first question will go to the other candidate, and we go back and forth. Who gets to answer first, who gets to answer second.
Dave, is there still time, if there are listeners that have questions on their mind, to get those to you for consideration?
I have no trouble with that. If they do have something they'd like to see explored in the debate, yeah, send me an email.
And Dave, what's your email address?
dthompson@prairiepublic.org.
Now, this debate will be occurring in the Prairie Public Television Studios. Dave, it's not open to the public to view.
That is correct? That is correct. And it's a space thing. And number two, we do not want disruptions. We don't want people yelling and saying, oh, yeah, that's great. We want to just have the issues focused on, the candidates and their issue stands.
Visiting with Dave Thompson, he's Prairie Public's news director. He will be moderating the first gubernatorial Republican debate. That's coming next Tuesday, April 23rd, right here on Prairie Public Radio, on Prairie Public Television, and as Dave reminded us, online at prairiepublic.org or via your smart speaker. Dave, are you looking forward to this?
Very much so, because there are a lot of, shall we say, unknowns from both candidates on certain issues. We're hoping to get some answers to that.
We'll be listening, Dave, and best wishes to you and best wishes for a great debate.
Thank you, Craig. Looking forward to it.
Rick Gione is next with another edition of Prairie Plates. Stay with us.
Should kids be trained in the rules of gun safety? We continue our series on guns and children in America. That story on the next morning edition from NPR News.
4 a.m. Central to 9 a.m. Central here on Prairie Public. Arts programming on Prairie Public is supported in part by the North Dakota Council on the Arts, a state agency developing, promoting, and supporting the arts in North Dakota.
I like bagels.
Have some salad.
All I eat is pizza.
Eat some barbecue.
Apple sauce and some nice red beets.
All right, it's time to get cooking and, more importantly, eating with Rick Gion for Prairie Plates. Rick, how you doing?
I'm doing well. I'm always hungry, Ashley.
I know you are. And today you have got a segment for eating for sure. And man, after this past weekend of getting 70 degrees and sunny, and you could smell the grills coming out, and you could feel people wanting to cook outside and throw some stuff on the grill. And we're going to do a lot of talking about grilling in the coming weeks. And we're going to kick it off with talking about steak.
The big steak, yes. Well, around here, you're going to see a lot of porterhouse / T-bone. Porterhouse has a little bit larger tenderloin on the back. Obviously, tenderloin by itself is a popular cut at restaurants and just grilling in general. But it's gotten less popular. The ribeye has really become the very popular cut around here. But I do like a porterhouse because it's just a really nice steak, bone in, great flavor. It doesn't dry out. You can cook it different ways. You can actually, I've cooked them right on the coals, not with per se like briquettes because they get a little more ash, but cowboy charcoal, I've actually cooked them, and ribeyes, flank steaks, skirt steaks. That's kind of an interesting technique.
Wait, you just said cowboy charcoal. Is that the technique it's called when you cook right on the charcoal?
It's a little, that charcoal is different than the briquettes that people are used to.
Oh, really?
Yeah, than the Royal Oak or some of those brands. Kingsford is a big briquette charcoal, but that natural charcoal, really, it burns hotter, so you're going to get a crust. And there will be some residual pieces of coal you got to knock off. But it's kind of fun just to put the steak right on the coals and listen to the sizzle and smell it.
That is a very satisfying sound.
It is.
Yeah. And we also got, what, New York strip, a sirloin?
Yeah. And a loin is more in that middle section of the cow. Sirloin's a little more in the back. It's not a rump cut, obviously. It's the sirloin, so it's in back of the regular loin.
Mm-hmm.
And then some plate cuts, which is down at the bottom in that belly area. Flank and skirt are extremely popular around here these days for people making tacos and fajitas. And folks like to make tacos at home these days and street tacos, that sort of thing. Onions and cilantro, they're just delicious.
How important is it to know what you're going to do with the steak when you're choosing what cut?
I think it's tremendously important, and you should do research on that topic. In fact, I was just reading an article in America's Test Kitchen about how to properly cook Wagyu steaks, which are a totally different thing than your typical like prime choice and select USDA categories. And you should really do research on how to cook different steaks different ways, because if you're using a sous vide, a thickness of a cut, fat content, those things can really weigh in how you do those, in how they come out. Because after a sous vide, you really want to sear them with a torch. I've done it with a map gas torch quite a few times, or a crust.
And that's the one where they're sealed and you're cooking them boiling underwater, right? Sous vide?
It's not quite boiling.
Okay.
You kind of get them to a temperature, my friend, like 140, and hopefully the USDA won't call me. But we did 140 for a couple hours on some porterhouses and bone-in ribeyes, and then torched them with this map gas torch, which gets really hot after. Or you really crank up the charcoal on a Weber grill or a Big Green Egg and really crank it up to like 800, 900 degrees, and you're really going to get a nice crust.
Yeah, and then you're just cooking that for a couple seconds, I would think. At the end?
It doesn't last too long. You really have to watch it, because if you crank that thing up to close to 1,000 degrees, you may burn stuff. But the goal is to get a crust. I don't really like grill marks on a steak. I'm after crust.
What should we be looking for, whether it's a butcher shop or a grocery store, when going to select a good cut of beef? Usually you hear a word like marbling.
Yeah, marbling, bone in, bone out, muscle structure, that sort of thing. Believe it or not, a lot of the meat shops are not butcher shops. They get primal cuts from the same distributor as grocery stores. It's usually IBP or one of those big one of those big slaughterhouses. Yeah. And so there are butcher shops or meat shops, there is a difference there, that do specialty cuts. One is Prime Cut Meats in Fargo, and they'll do bone-in, ribeye, dry age, those type of things. There are other meat shops in the area. There's a lot of things to steak, and I'm sure I'll get some emails at plates@prairiepublic.org after this, because people are very opinionated about steak, and they should be.
Well, we want to hear about it. plates@prairiepublic.org. Tell us where you are going for our best steak, or what Rick and I need to still learn about throwing some good steaks on here. Now, you were talking about specialty cuts. And a few years ago, my daughter was living in Brazil. She was finishing up high school, and we got invited to all sorts of these little backyard barbecues, and they were called churrascos. And it was, as far as I knew, just cutting small bits of steak, roasting them over an open fire. And then we tried to do it at home, and it was actually kind of difficult because we don't cut our steaks quite the same way. If memory serves me correctly, we had to ask for them to leave the fat on a specific cut.
Yeah, and I think you're referring to a picanha, and pardon me on my pronunciation. I'm trying to get as close as...
No falo portugués.
Exactly. Yes, exactly. I just eat the steak. I don't talk, you know. But yeah, that picanha cut, it's a sirloin cap. It's very close to the rump. And yes, they cut that with the fat cap on. It adds to the flavor. It's big in South America, not just in Brazil. But if you go to, I don't know, churrasco, you pronounced it better than
churrasco I do. Churrasco is what I'm remembering they were saying.
If you go to Fogo de Chão, or if you tried Brazilian Harvest Grill when it was in Mandan, which was very good, but it's closed now, that's what you're going to get. And that's a very trendy steak right now because it is absolutely delicious.
Oh, it is. Okay, interesting. Now, when you say trending, are you saying in restaurants or in grocery stores and doing the whole the way they do it in Brazil, which is the backyard barbecue all the time?
No, it's mostly at home. You don't find this unless you go to one of those restaurants, and the closest one is Minneapolis, Fogo de Chão. You're going to have to specially order some things. That's where your butcher shop or meat shop comes in. I doubt the grocery store could get that in for you. Maybe they could. You'd probably have to order like a large order of it, not just a couple steaks. But it is very delicious. A couple other steaks that are trendy right now are a chuck eye, which is actually an extension of the ribeye going into the chuck quarter portion of the front of the cow, the kind of that shoulder portion. It's a little more marbled, different kind of muscle structure, but it has that eye in it. And that one is very trendy right now. And as always, like for a steak frite, you lived in France, and the hanger steak or butcher steak is always popular, and you want to cook that rare, medium rare, because and that steak is delicious.
Now, you've talked a little bit about grilling and then even the sous vide, but how about just straight up on the stove, Rick?
Absolutely. I like to use a carbon steel or cast iron pan. You can use clarified butter, a little olive oil, it's probably some cloves of garlic.
Why clarified butter?
Because there's milk solids in butter and they will burn. You need a higher temperature fat to fry that steak in, or however you want to say it. And you don't want the milk solids in that butter because you're going to stink up your house pretty bad. And you want to cook that thing hot.
So I've gotten ghee,
yes,
which is what I am familiar with calling clarified butter,
yes,
at Indian restaurants and at Indian supermarkets. And you know, sometimes they're in with the Asian market too. Can you get clarified butter at, you know, any grocery store?
Well, ghee is clarified butter. Sometimes it's fermented a little bit.
Right, but I have to get that at a specialty market.
Yes, you do. And sometimes I see it at Hornbacher's here locally in Fargo. I don't know about like Dan's in Bismarck or Hugo's in Grand Forks. But yeah, I mean, the A&A supermarket or some of those specialty markets.
You might want to start with a specialty market then for clarified butter.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
But you can actually clarify it yourself if you melt it, and you can take a spoon and pull out the, you'll see the milk solids and just pull them out. It's not that hard to do. They come to the top. There's some foam and then some milk solids. You'll see, you can microwave the butter. If microwave's not your thing, you can just melt it on the stove, pull out the milk solids. Then you have clarified butter. It's not that hard to make. So, yeah, you're going to need that if you're going to do a steak on the stove.
Now, I've heard other things like a tuna steak. I've certainly eaten one of those before. Obviously, we've been talking primarily about beef here. Is steak one of those things where it's like, okay, nut milk is maybe not the same thing as milk? is it a big, thick cut? Can there be a mushroom steak or a tuna steak?
I think it's just
you're a purist.
Yeah, well, right. And I think just a big, thick cut of something you're going to grill or something maybe could be called a steak. Yes, there's mushroom.
I've grilled watermelon.
You know, well, they call like thick cut cauliflower steak. I've seen that. I've seen that quite a few times. Maybe it has to do with thickness and I don't know, that sort of thing. But yeah, it's not quite a beef steak or bison steak or elk steak. But
do you let yours come to room temperature before you cook a steak?
Absolutely. That's one of the big rules. You know, you want to set, I know this sounds weird, but you want to, for people that don't like doing this stuff, but you need to have it out for at least an hour, in my opinion.
Or a day.
We're going to get the USDA called on us.
I know. I've got a coworker who doesn't like having cheese at my house because she knows I leave it out all day because it's a habit I picked up when I lived in France. And you did not put cheese in the fridge.
Well, those soft cheeses are better warm, that's for sure, when they're gooey.
They taste like cheese. Oh, man.
Yes, they do. And they're nice and gooey, and put a little pear or fig on your cracker.
Man.
It's delicious.
All right, Will. We are hitting all of the good stuff today.
We are.
You can always email your suggestions for what you want to hear from Rick, or, you know, if there's somewhere that we didn't talk about that you're like, you got to know about this place to go and especially grab a good steak, send it to plates@prairiepublic.org. Thanks, Rick.
This is Ari Shapiro from NPR. If working from home is your new routine and you've got a car you don't need anymore, consider donating it to this station. It could be worth hundreds of dollars in support. Thank you.
Just go to prairiepublic.org, open the support tab, and choose vehicle donation.
This is Dakota Daybook for April 17th. A petticoat is an article of clothing worn under a skirt. It helps to smooth out wrinkles in the skirt. In the days when very full skirts were in fashion, a petticoat of several layers helped the skirt stand out. The petticoat has long been a symbol of modesty and proper feminine behavior of an era. It has also been used as an insult towards women who were deemed to be venturing out of proper feminine behavior. For example, English feminist Mary Wollstonecraft, an early advocate for women's rights, was called a hyena in petticoats. Petticoat government was a term of derision directed at women involved in politics. It was also an implied criticism of men who had somehow allowed women to take control. The earliest use of this term is traced to 1699 in the writing of English satirist Edward Ward. While it was used to describe women who had the temerity to become active in politics, it was broad enough to include women who exercised any sort of power among men. By the late 1800s, the term was in common use. In 1894, the Langdon, North Dakota Courier-Democrat printed the text of a recent presentation. It was used to compliment those who have renounced fealty to petticoat government. An 1898 article about the Civil War nurse Clara Barton called it petticoat government for her to give orders to male teamsters. On this date in 1905, the Fargo Forum and Daily Republican printed a letter titled A Protest. The writer said that instead of being critical and hiding behind anonymous insinuations, citizens should meet with teachers and principals to ask questions about school policies so they could understand the school procedures and guidelines. He urged the public to support public schools and forego politics and fads, and included petticoat government in his list of bad policies. North Dakota granted women to vote in state elections beginning in 1917. The United States finally followed suit with the passage of the 19th Amendment in 1920. However, women who became active in politics were still seen as upstarts. As late as 1937, a newspaper article announced that Petticoat Pollies had won control of the government of Ford, Kansas, and the town could now look forward to 2 years of petticoat government. Today's Dakota Datebook, written by Dr. Carol Butcher. I'm Ann Alquist.
Dakota Datebook is produced in cooperation with the State Historical Society of North Dakota, with funding by Humanities North Dakota, North Dakota's largest lifelong learning community.
And that's a wrap for today's Main Street here on Prairie Public. We are deeply grateful that you could join us. Tomorrow on the show, we'll hear from WDAY's John Wheeler, the station's chief meteorologist. We'll hear John's reflections on this mild winter that we've had, climate change, and more. That's tomorrow on Main Street, and we hope you'll join us again.